Case number 22-5919, United States of America versus Zachary Knight. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Thomas Lyons for the appellant. You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, my name is Tom Lyons, and I represent Zachary Knight. This is an appeal from a sentencing at the District Court, Eastern District of Kentucky. The single issue here is whether the court erred in applying Section 4B1.5B to Knight's conviction for attempted production under 18 U.S.C. 2251. Specifically, the court's interpretation of the term prohibited sexual conduct, we contended, is not within the plain text of the guideline and is inconsistent with the guideline commentary to 4B1.5. First, let me say a couple things about what's not at issue. What's not at issue is whether or not this was a pattern of activity case. At the district court, we did not claim that this was, that the defendant did not meet the pattern of activity. So the focus is really on the prohibited conduct section of the guideline. The defendant objected to this five-level enhancement under 4B1.5, and we argued that attempt crimes are not covered by the guideline text, nor the definition of prohibited sexual conduct in Application Note 4A. That note says as follows. In any case in which, or the text says as follows. In any case in which the defendant's instant offense of conviction is a covered sex crime, there is no dispute about that. Neither 4B1.1 nor subsection A of this guideline applies, and the defendant engaged in a pattern of activity involving prohibited sexual conduct. Now, the term prohibited sexual conduct is obviously extremely broad, but I do not believe that the natural construction of that term would include attempted prohibited sexual conduct. Interestingly, the terms covered sex crime and pattern activity and prohibited sexual conduct, they're not defined by the guideline itself. They're only defined by the commentary. Now the government claims in its brief that the plain text of the guideline itself supports this enhancement. That was not an argument that I believe that was made before the district court. But even if it was, that is an extremely broad term, and I'm not sure what the outer bounds or parameters of that term would be. I think the court and the parties at the district court focused on the guideline application notes that define those terms. So, in the application note number two, which defines covered sex crimes, the Sentencing Commission specifically included attempts as part of covered sex crimes, but did not include attempts as part of prohibited sexual conduct. Basically, they define prohibited sexual conduct as any offense under 18 United States Code 2426, B1A or B, second section, the production of child pornography, or three, trafficking in child pornography, but only if you had a prior conviction. So the government's position, and I think the court found this at the district level, that when they mention 2426, that includes any crime that's covered by the chapters dealing with sex offenses, whether that's chapter 110, 109, or 117. The problem with that construction is it is not a natural outgrowth of the text language of the guideline, number one. Number two, it appears to me that that language is disjunctive. So in other words, if it were an offense under 2426, that would constitute a prohibited sex conduct, or alternatively, the production of child pornography, or trafficking in child pornography, but only if you have a prior conviction. So it seems to me that the definition itself is confusing, because any offense described in 18-24-6 would already include production of child pornography, and it certainly would include receipt of child pornography, and it specifically says it does not include receipt or possession of child pornography. So how can that be if the statute itself covers those offenses? So it's internally inconsistent all by itself. Basically, what the argument was is that the statute the note is completely confusing, and it adds a crime, essentially. It adds crimes over and above the text in violation of the Havis principle. In Havis, we had to deal with the controlled substance offense, and the commentary added attempts, and the court said that was not permitted. We have the same kind of situation here, or at least a very similar situation, where the commentary is adding attempt crimes in one particular definition to expand the text of the guideline. I think that is buttressed by sort of the legislative history attached to the amendment to this particular guideline and to the definitions contained within the commentary. When you go back and look at that legislative history, it's clear that they were trying to punish more harshly sort of two groups of people. One are offenders who previously had a conviction, whether federal, state, or otherwise, and then the other one, people who had very similar conduct, but who, for whatever reason, did not have an actual conviction. It was not intended, as best I can read, to cover attempt crimes within the parameters of that particular comment. Now, the court knows, in looking for a dispositive case or looking for some binding authority in this particular circuit, I don't see a case that specifically addresses this issue of whether attempts are covered under 4B1.5, and therefore the five-level enhancement should apply.
Can I just interrupt you for one second?
Yes, ma'am.
We're having lots of conversation about, kind of what the notes say, and why isn't this just a straightforward question of what the plain text of the guideline says? I mean, attempts under certain circumstances are in fact prohibited, and they are related to sex. Like, why do we have to even resort to all of these other things to tell us what this term means when it seems pretty straightforward?
Well, I'm not sure I agree, Your Honor, that it is very straightforward. I mean, prohibited sex conduct could mean any number of things. The government takes the position that if it's unlawful somewhere, for instance, in a state court, under state law or under federal law or some other law,
it's prohibited.
If it's prohibited, what would that include? Is that what this particular guideline was designed to do by Congress? This guideline was designed to find repeat and dangerous sex offenders. What if the one of the occasions was a voyeurism, for instance, under Kentucky law, for instance, and there was no conviction? Is that prohibited sexual conduct? Is it prohibited? Yes. Is it conduct of a sexual nature? Yes. If it came in under relevant conduct under 1B1.3, would that trigger the five-level enhancement? You can tell from the language itself, prohibited sexual conduct and sex crime, that these are kind of being used as terms of art, much like serious felony conviction under the drug statutes or something along those lines. It sort of looks like a term of art rather than just sort of a generic term that you could easily say, yes, this is included, no, this is not included. Moreover, the district court didn't even consider that issue. And the government didn't present it that way. That's sort of new to the brief as we've come to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. The other problem that I see with 2426, and I think I answered your question, but the other problem I see with 2426 in the way the commission did this as characterizing what prohibited sexual conduct is that it's a conviction statute. In other words, the whole purpose of 2426 is to increase the mandatory minimum punishment for repeat offenders. That's Section A of the statute. And then B goes down to give you definitions underneath that recidivism statute. So I don't think that statute was meant to be somehow incorporated into a note or a comment in a guideline that is increasing the offense level by five levels. Your Honor, I think I'm out of time. I do want to reserve, I should have said this at the beginning, I do want to reserve just a minute or two for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, Jessica Urban on behalf of the United States. The district court correctly applied the sentencing enhancement at 4B1.5B. The defendant's argument is very narrow. It is that the defendant's conduct, his attempted production of child pornography, does not meet the definition set forth in the application note to Section 4B1.5B. As set forth in our brief, and as I will highlight here today, that argument is wrong. However, there are additional grounds for affirming the district court's application of that enhancement. A, the defendant's undisputed conduct falls within the broader, plain language meaning of the guideline term, prohibited sexual conduct, as Your Honor, Judge Davis alluded to. Thus, under Kaiser and Riccardi, this court need not and should not consider the application note's definition in order to find that the defendant's behavior was encompassed as a form of prohibited sexual conduct. And B, the defendant's undisputed conduct extended beyond the attempted production of child pornography and involved other criminal conduct, including the attempted enticement of a minor. And the defendant has never argued why that conduct would not be considered prohibited sexual conduct under the guideline itself or under the application note's definition. For each and all of these reasons, the district court's judgment should be affirmed. Focusing on the plain and ordinary meaning of the guideline term, prohibited sexual conduct, it clearly covers what the defendant did. And indeed, the defendant has never seriously tried to argue that what he did would not fall within the ordinary common sense understanding of that term. He sent sex toys and lingerie for a child to use. He engaged in efforts to mutually masturbate with the child over webcam. He requested that another adult take and send him explicit photos of the child. All of this conduct was prohibited by federal law, as well as by state laws, as set forth in our brief. Moreover, there's nothing in the structure or purpose or history of the guidelines that suggests that his behavior would fall outside that ordinary definition of prohibited sexual conduct. Turning to the application note, however, in the event that the court does not want to rely on the plain language of the guideline term itself, that application note also indisputably covers the defendant's conduct. Application Note 4A1 expressly covers, quote, any offense described in 18 U.S.C. Section 2426B1A-B. In turn, 2426B1A covers any offense under this chapter, that is under Chapter 117, which covers transportation and enticement crimes, any offense under Chapter 109A, which includes sexual abuse crimes, under Chapter 110, which are sexual exploitation or child pornography crimes, and under Section 1591, the sex trafficking statute. The attempted production of child pornography is an offense under Chapter 110, specifically under Section 2251, and attempted enticement, which the defendant acknowledged in his plea agreement he also committed, is an offense under Chapter 117, specifically under Section 2422B. Moreover, Section 2426B1A, by its terms, does not exempt attempts. The defendant was questioning today if that subsection 1, that is application note 4A, subsection 1, covers production, then why do we have subsection 2, which also refers to production? And although the commission has not explicitly given an answer to that, I think there's a very plausible reason why that is the case. 2426B1A notes that it covers all sorts of crimes, as I referenced earlier. Subsection 3 then notes that under the guidelines, receipt of child pornography, possession of child pornography, and transportation of child pornography without a prior conviction are exempted from that definition in subsection 1, which is otherwise very broad and has no disclaimer or any exemption of attempt offenses. Subsection 2 then comes in to reaffirm that production of child pornography is indeed one of those offenses that is considered prohibited sexual conduct, even if the receipt, possession, or trafficking in some instances is not. Moreover, the application note does not require a prior conviction of any kind. The defendant has questioned what limiting principle there might be and suggested that the guideline is not intended to apply to someone like the defendant, either because he did not have any prior convictions. He seems to suggest he was not a repeat and dangerous sex offender against children. But the record does not support that argument. As explained in our brief, the defendant engaged in a course of conduct over more than a year in which he was repeatedly trying to obtain sexually explicit imagery of the victim when he was sending sex toys and other items to the minor and trying to engage in mutual masturbation over that webcam. He's precisely the kind of offender that the guideline and its commentary was seeking to subject to higher sentencing guidelines. Moreover, it's notable that courts have consistently held and suggested that attempted production qualifies as prohibited sexual conduct, and we cited those cases in our brief. For all these reasons, unless the court has further questions, I would submit that the district court correctly applied the enhancement at 4B1.5 and that there are multiple grounds from which the court can choose to affirm that judgment. Thank you.
Really just a couple of points. First, if the court says that the guideline language itself is plain, then why does the Sentencing Commission feels the need to actually define all of these terms in very specific ways? It seems to me logical that the definitions that are contained in the commentary in the application notes directly flow from the idea that the plain language itself is probably too broad and we're not going to be able to tell which crimes are included and which crimes are not. Secondly, when the government suggests that the statute somehow excludes or creates carve-outs under 2426, I'm not sure what the commission's authority is for doing that. If the plain language is prohibited sexual conduct, on what basis does the Sentencing Commission actually start excluding including or cutting out carve-outs to that language in commentary that never makes its way back to Congress. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's exactly the kinds of things that Havis and some of the other cases were talking about when it's saying that they are adding crimes or adding terms that allow the guideline enhancements to apply. So it seems to me that the government is essentially conceding that there are sections in the notes in themselves, particularly Application Note 4, which are separate and distinct and somehow add and subtract from the plain language that's contained in the guideline text. And I'm not sure that the government actually has, or that the Sentencing Commission actually has that authority. And for that reason, I would ask the court to reverse and remand this case to the district court.
We appreciate the argument both of you have given, and we'll consider the case carefully. Mr. Lyons, I noticed that you're appointed counsel under the Criminal Justice Act, and we very, pardon me?
For about 30 years now.
Well, we very much appreciate your accepting the appointment in this case and all the other appointments, and you render a valuable service to your clients and the court. Thank you.